right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, late May edition of the show, and what a week it has been, as since last time we talked, the Buccaneers have now made official what we all had a feeling was coming and were wondering when it was going to come down, and now it has. Gerald McCoy, of course, has been released by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And not only that, we had about a day to process that, and then the news came in, and Ndamukong Suh, looking like he's going to sign a contract with the Buccaneers. And Suh, in fact, as of this recording, and I'm recording the show today, midday on Thursday, is on vacation in France, which I imagine is going to be at least a few days. So when he gets back, they'll be able to sign that. But everybody is talking as if it's all but official. And when it does become official, we'll find out a lot more about the money involved and things like that. It won't be $13 million, obviously, because that was kind of the point of releasing McCoy. But we're going to get all this stuff done today because we're in a spot right now as a fan base. Everybody's angry. There's a lot of free-floating anger out there. I've never seen somebody polarize the fan base as much as McCoy seems to, which is funny, but the past couple days now have been just a complete trial of Gerald McCoy as a Buccaneer, and there doesn't feel like there's a middle ground. You either are totally in love with his place in Buccaneer history, despite the fact that the teams he played on don't have much of a place in Buccaneer history, or you think he's garbage. And it's just weird in watching it all play out on Twitter or in the comment sections of online articles that I've seen, which maybe I shouldn't be reading the comment sections. But we'll talk about all that today here on the show, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, where, by the way, folks, they're not going anywhere. 58 years now serving the Tampa Bay community, and they are going to stay right there, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway is the physical location. Or you can go to the website, BillCurryFord.com, that's C-U-R-R-I-E, where they are keeping right on with the nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles, everything they got over there, which includes unlimited years, unlimited miles. You get a 10-year roadside assistance and one-year complimentary service. So you get oil changes, anything you need, you bring it in that first year. They'll keep it going in and out, no problem, complimentary, just like that. And very few places do something like that, but Bill Curry Ford is one of them. And you can see, again, everything they have there on the website. If you go to BillCurryFord.com, if you go there and are ready to go look around in person, again, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, and it's on the east side of the road, just north of Hillsboro there. You can see Sean Sullivan, fellow Jesuit High grad like me. He'll give you the Joe Bucks Fan discount, so make sure you mention that you heard it here. Say Joe Bucks Fan, say the free stretch, say Bobby Fenton, whatever it is, and that'll be on top of the already transparent online pricing. It's all there at Bill Curry Ford and BillCurryFord.com. So looking at what's going on now, first of all, let's talk about the actual move the Bucks made. Because, again, at this point, it's not a surprise. At this point, the Bucks didn't have any other way to go. They were not going to pay Gerald McCoy $13 million this coming season. And Gerald McCoy was not going to play for the Bucks for a penny less than what his contract said it should be at $13 million. He'll play for another team at less, and it'll probably be an amount comparable to whatever Suh gets here when we get all those numbers hammered out. But if you want to criticize the Bucks for something, again, you can criticize the Bucks for a string of decisions and just a general lack of production that they got out of a salary cap team that was like right near the cap. I mean, if you're going to be that close to the cap, you know, a lot of these teams have cap room and all this all over the place, but you can go back a few years if you want to, and again, criticize any number of decisions, and we're not going to do that on the show today. We've had plenty of time, and we'll have plenty of time to do that. But, you know, why is this team a double-digit loss team for the past few years, and yet we're spending right up to the cap? How does that happen? What could have been done differently to lead them to the point where maybe they didn't have to make a move like this? Fine, on and on and on. But right now, they couldn't afford to pay Gerald McCoy $13 million. He wasn't worth $13 million at this point against the cap. Again, it's more about the cap than it is the money. So they let him go. I understand that. Again, you might even argue, and you could argue really, that they should have let him go maybe before free agency, maybe sooner, maybe giving them a chance to have more money to play with when they were going through the process of trying to acquire other people as we get to right now, they had barely enough to sign their draft picks. This will help with that. Sue, whatever he signs for, will take up a lot of that too. And I don't even know, you know, what they're going to save. If you sign Sue for $10 million, $9 million, $8 million, you know, you only save a few million dollars. But again, that's valuable money when you're that close to the cap the way the Bucks are. So I understand the move. We all do, I think. And even though whatever camp you fall into, whether you're very, very upset this week because a treasured member of both the team and the community is leaving, or whether you could care less and you're ready to move on and you think Sue is superior to McCoy, we're going to talk about that coming up here. You know, all fine, but this move was inevitable. So let's look at the two players. And, you know, you go all the way back to the 2010 draft, and Sue got taken one spot ahead of McCoy. They are 1 year apart as far as their age. Sue is 1 year older, but of course they're the same year in their draft class and things like that. And if you look at in the past few days, there's been, it kind of breaks down into people who actually care about numbers and people who could care less about numbers and just like to use the eyeball test or their gut and things like that. And I always think it's foolish to reject numbers. And I'm not going to lecture everybody on advanced stats or things like that right now, but I will say this. Numbers are information. And numbers are dispassionate. Numbers just give you what happened based on, what, you know, again, any number of measures, millions of them, but they give you information on what happened. Coldly, dispassionately, very objectively, and very black and white without gray area. They are numbers. And some people just come, it's a mindset and a mentality that permeates, I think, a lot of people's minds well beyond sports. It goes into politics and other things. And again, I won't get into these things now. But if you look at Gerald McCoy and Ngamukong Suh, okay, over the course of their entire careers, but more importantly now, over the course of the past few years, they are pretty close as far as pass rush. Not sacks, necessarily, although they're not that far off, and McCoy is an interior guy through and through. And McCoy missed a couple, he missed 13 games worth in his first couple of years because of a torn bicep. That's another thing we'll get to. People are talking about, oh, well, Sue's way more durable. The durability thing is the same. I mean, Sue has more games played and more snaps played overall because of those first 2 years. The idea that Gerald McCoy missed 13 games with torn biceps back in like 2011 and 2010 is in no way relevant now. They've both played pretty much full seasons over the past few years. And so I don't get any. You can cite those missed games when you're talking about comparing numbers, because a lot of cases McCoy has numbers that are close to Sue's while having played fewer games. But when it comes to durability, I don't want to hear it. Pass rush, pressure generated, all that stuff. And again, not just sacks. Sue and McCoy are pretty close. And in fact, McCoy's been a little bit better there. Now, against the run, Sue has been better and maybe a little more better than McCoy was better against the pass. They are pretty comparable is the overall point. So if you're just looking at this move from the standpoint of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, did they get better this past week or did they get worse this past week? It feels like it's almost a wash if you just base it on the production that both of these men have put forward in the past few seasons. Now, you know, we don't know what will happen next season. One guy could play way better than the other next season, and we don't know which one that is, and there's no way to know. We don't know what team McCoy is going to play on. But, again, if you want to look at something like pressure percentage, nearly equal, you want to look at, okay, here's one where it might matter a little bit. Versatility, not durability, but versatility. There, I think Sue has an edge, especially under the new scheme, especially with Todd Bowles, who prizes that versatility. You know, Sue's played nose tackle in a 3-4. He's also played end. He has played three technique in a 4-3. He's done all those things, whereas McCoy has pretty much been at that one spot, and I think that Sue, in addition to the idea that he's not going to have to be signed for $13 million like McCoy would have to have been paid, offers them some of that versatility. I think that matters, so there, that's something. And besides that, I mean, I don't really think the Bucs did get much better or worse. I don't think Sue is going to stand out in a way that McCoy didn't. And I think a lot of people, judging by everybody's reactions on both sides of it the past few days, have been kind of seeing what they wanted to see or not seeing what they didn't want to see with Gerald McCoy. The reaction to this whole thing has disappointed me a little bit as far as, it doesn't matter, but my faith in the Bucks fan base, and it's probably not the Bucks fan base, it's probably all fans, it's probably all people. But the rejection of information, the rejection of data, watching people go back and forth on Twitter, Gerald McCoy has played for this team during a lost decade, okay? And when you look back at the past, you know, what is it, 10 seasons since 2010, or it's been 9 seasons since 2010, counting 2010, all right? I can barely, and I'm, as you know, a lifelong Bucks fan going back to being in my mom's womb for the 1979 NFC Championship game and that whole season. My mom climbed those stairs with little blast assist Bobby Fenton in there at the Sombrero, and it was game on from there once I was born. I'm just come from a huge Bucks family. I was never one of those kids that said I liked the Cowboys for a little while. No, Bucks since I could understand what football was. So I can tell you details and scores of games from like 1987. Like I have these things burned into my mind, even through losing seasons. And then of course the 90s, same thing. I have so many memories just burned in there, and for the rest of my life, I'll remember the scores, random games. And yet the past 9 seasons, which are the most recent, I barely remember anything. Like I really, honestly, like this has been, I guess the part from the 80s and 90s, even though the Bucks were bad then, was colored by my childhood. And, you know, everything seems bigger when you're a kid. It's a very formative time of your life. And you're like a sponge. Everything's so vivid. You're just taking it all in. And a lot of times I didn't even care if the Bucks won. Or excuse me, I always care if they won. I didn't care if they made the playoffs or not. I just cared every Sunday about that one Bucks game. And it felt like the weight of the world, the fate of the world, was resting on it. And that was, every Sunday was like that. When you're like 10 years old, you know, that's how it is. So the past 9 seasons, you know, I'm an adult now, got other stuff going in my life, and it hasn't changed my being a Bucks fan, but it has changed my memories. Like, I don't remember anything. I mean, I almost remember nothing about the past 9 seasons. Think of how sad that is. Like, you show me a highlight of a game from like 2016, I'm like, what game? I don't, and I've watched them all. It's not, I've watched every down, but I just don't remember any of it. And I think that's the big thing with the Gerald McCoy haters, if you want to let me use a cliche. People have been pointing out, oh, how can you say this guy's one of the top players in franchise history? You know, you can't really say that about anybody who didn't play for a playoff team. It just, he doesn't have that feather in his cap. He didn't elevate his teammates to that position, you know, with his leadership, or he wasn't good enough to elevate them and kind of tie them on his back and take them to a postseason, which I think is a moronic thing to say. I mean, he's a defensive tackle, okay? So if you were to criticize the Bucks during all that time for not getting that far, fine. But to say that that diminishes what Gerald McCoy's actual talent has been is wrong. Does it diminish his legacy? Of course. It diminishes any player's legacy when you play on bad teams. But is it his fault? A lot of people today and yesterday and the past couple days have been asking or acting like it's his fault. And that's the part that I have a real problem with. But yet, if I sat here, and I like Gerald McCoy, I'm in the pro-McCoy camp. If I sat here and said to you, hey, what's your favorite Gerald McCoy memory from his long career with the Bucks? You know, he was here for 9 seasons. What's your favorite Gerald McCoy memory? I can't even come up with one. I can't. I mean, you know my biggest Gerald McCoy memory? It was from college in the 2009 National Championship game, Oklahoma versus Florida, for the National Championship down at Joe Robbie Stadium, where I was lucky enough to sit in the first row with tickets I scalped outside for like $300 on a night when tickets were going for like $900 just because I got lucky. And I remember going to that game as a Gator fan and watching Gerald McCoy intercept Tim Tebow on a little screen pass, and McCoy jumped in front of it, having no idea that he'd play for the Bucks one day. I knew who he was, but that's my like most vivid Gerald McCoy memory, when he was at Oklahoma. And all these, it's not because he didn't make plays, but it's just, I mean, do you have any? No, nobody. I think a lot of people don't, and I think that's what's coloring people's opinions of him as a player. But, you know, when a guy puts pressure on the quarterback and the quarterback rushes the throw and there's an interception, he's not what you remember. And a good example of that and I'm just picking, you know, one of the most recent ones. This past season, the game against Carolina at home that the Buccaneers won, two fourth quarter, I think it was both in the fourth quarter, interceptions by Cam Newton thrown to, I believe it was Andrew Adams. Didn't Adams get both of them? And he's gone now, but it was the safety, Andrew Adams, who picked off Cam Newton. And on both those plays, I believe, Gerald McCoy had a hand in Cam's face, hit him as he threw, and forced the picks. It was, you know, great displays of just power pass rushing. And nobody credits Gerald McCoy with two picks there, and he doesn't get credit for two sacks there either. But plays like that are where guys like McCoy make an impact. And for nine seasons, save for those few games in the early part that he missed with the torn biceps, he did that week in, week out. Now, his play tailed off a little bit recently. Of course, he's crossed over that, you know, 30-year-old barrier, whatever you want to call it. And Sue has too, by the way, which is why I say it's probably not going to end up being that different with one or the other. But the Bucs might be a little bit better. I mean, if you want to go back to a number, here's another number. And again, some of you are people who your ears turn off when you hear Pro Football Focus or anything involving numbers, guys. You don't think it's football enough. Hey, fine. You can choose whatever you wish to do with data, but it is just data. It's information. To me, information is good. So if you go over their whole careers, WAR, wins above replacement, it's not quite the same as in baseball, which is a little bit easier to measure, is more linear and more black and white. But since 2010, among all interior linemen, this is their whole careers, okay? Sue ranks fourth, McCoy ranks ninth, both pretty good. Since 2016, just the past three seasons, 16, 17, and 18, Sue ranks fifth, McCoy ranks 14th. And last year alone, Sue with the Rams, Sue ranks 15th or ranked 15th, and McCoy was 25th, again, among interior linemen. So now, here's another thing to remember, okay? Sue had Aaron Donald right there with him, and that makes a difference. Aaron Donald will not be coming to Tampa along with Sue. So it'll be interesting to see if Sue can maintain the production that he has had. But he has been slightly better overall recently. Their whole careers, it's not as pronounced, but in the past couple years, maybe a little more so. And we hope that keeps going. I mean, listen, I'm excited to have him, and I think it'll help the Buccaneers a little bit. I don't know how much of a difference it'll make. I think the Buccaneers' biggest problems are in the secondary. And again, we've talked all about that, and we'll have the whole offseason to talk about that. But I am still not crazy high on this team for a number of reasons. Most of all, though, the defense, and most of all in that category, the defensive secondary, which is mostly unproven guys or guys who have been proven and just have been okay if at best. So that's the big worry. But anyway, it's something we'll have all offseason to get on about. As soon as Sue gets back from wine country in France, he can sign the contract. Then we'll have some numbers and things like that, and then we can get a little more info on exactly what the Bucs say. But the move had to be made, and I am sad to see Gerald McCoy go. Let me say this, and if you haven't had a chance, go online on Twitter or just Google it if you need to and watch his video. He posted a video saying goodbye to Tampa Bay, and it was a really, as always with Gerald McCoy, a really classy thing, a really well-spoken, eloquent message, real heartfelt. And he said, and I'm quoting now, he said, "I am a Buccaneer forever, and I will be back." He said, "I will retire as a Buck." So he's already saying that. We don't even know where he's going next. And I think that's really cool. I always, and maybe it's because I'm a native of the area, I always have a real deep appreciation for guys that really take to this place, and not just on the field, but off the field, like being here, like being a part of the community. I value that. I know it doesn't necessarily matter on the field. A guy could hate this area and think all of us are morons and still be a great player on the field, and that would help the team immensely. I always appreciate that. And Gerald McCoy, both on and off the field, was a very big contributor around here, and I think he'll still be one, like he said, through the years, because it looks like he wants to stay around here. And I'll just say this one more thing. You know, just try and be able to separate in your minds one guy from the team. Quarterback is one thing. Even quarterback wins, though. I mean, there's still 21 other guys on the field, but at least with quarterbacks, you say, oh, his record as a starter was this, that, or the other. And I get that at least a little bit. But with an interior defensive lineman, okay, for you guys to sit here and trash him because he didn't play on any good teams is wrong. flat out, okay? And if you have criticisms of his actual play, again, and some people do, and that's fine. If they're valid, go for it. That's a perfectly valid stance. Oh, I don't think he was good enough for the... But I've seen a lot, and again, maybe I put too much stock in what idiots on Twitter say, but I've seen a lot of stuff out there the past few days. Oh, Gerald McCoy. I can't believe... What a clown. He's not clutch. He never rose to the occasion. But I mean, it's like, what are you basing this on? Because when you look at actual production that can be measured, he ranks very highly. And whatever your thoughts are on any one advanced stat or any one broad general stat like sacks or whatever, I mean, Gerald McCoy produced here, okay? And so I'm sad to see him go as a member of the Bucs and all. As far as the Ring of Honor goes, that's a whole other thing this week. People are already arguing about him in the Ring of Honor. Again, if you just go by what he actually did on the field, what he did, he's in the Ring of Honor, okay? Now, again, nobody wants to remember this era. I mean, even the bad Bucs from before had the 79. You know, you had Leroy Selman had that, and, you know, Jimmy Giles, all those guys. Paul Gruber even hung around long enough to get on those, you know, playoff teams there in the late 90s. But Gerald McCoy really has nothing to show for it as far as postseason things like that. And that's one big reason. It's the biggest reason he doesn't get the respect he does. Because if you just took Gerald McCoy out and plucked him on that 1997 team through 2002 through the Super Bowl. I'm not saying instead of Warren Sapp or anything like that, but I'm just saying if he played on those teams, you'd all would think he was a stud. Oh, Gerald McCoy, yeah, solid. It'd be a totally different mindset. It'd be a totally different way of looking at things. And I think a lot of people just can't get that out of their head. And again, like I said, I get it to a degree because the last 9 years have probably been the worst to me, the worst 9 years in Buccaneers history because at least in the 80s and 90s when I was a kid, you know, and it just felt different back then, and I didn't necessarily understand everything going on. I was just happy to be there every Sunday, and the games always felt... I mean, when the Bucs were 2-9 playing on a Sunday, you know, in 1991 or whatever, just randomly you want to pick that out, I would be so jacked up for that day's game, it'd be like it was the Super Bowl. Now, if the Bucs aren't like 5-2 by week 7, I'm like, we suck again. You know, if they're not 4-3 or better, I'm like, we suck again. And that's, I'm jaded, you know, I'm older now, I'm jaded. I miss the bright-eyed kid that I was, I think we all do, but the last 9 years have just felt like literally just a complete lost decade. And it sucks, that Gerald McCoy had his career and some very, very, very productive years wasted on those type of teams. And there's any number of reasons why it all happened. We can spread blame all around. But today's not about that. Today I just wanted to say my piece about Gerald McCoy. I salute him. I hope he does well wherever he goes. And I think he can do well. And I hope Ndamukong Suh does very well here and that our defense improves. I think both things could be possible. They're not mutually exclusive. If you want to email me, my email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y at yahoo.com. On Twitter, same thing. At Bobby Game Day here on the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. There's a couple of league things I wanted to bring up on the show today that have been announced this week. They were having more meetings, owners voting on things and whatnot. So, first of all, the playoff TV windows. They've changed one thing. This is minor, but I kind of like it. You know, they always do wildcard weekend, Saturday, 4:30 kickoff. 8:15 kickoff, then Sunday's the regular 1-4. They do the same thing on divisional playoff weekend. Well, starting this coming season, they've changed the Sunday divisional round. Now the wild card and divisional Saturdays will both be 4:30 and 8:15, but on divisional round Sunday, the games on Sunday will be at 3 p.m. and 6:30, like the championship weekend is now. And the reason they're doing that is because if you have West Coast teams playing in the divisional round, you're almost taking away an option because you can't put a divisional or a West Coast team in the 1 o'clock slot on Sunday if they're at home. And you don't even want to do it when they're on the road because you're forcing them to play really early on their body clocks. And it just makes it tough. With 3 and 6:30, you have a lot more flexibility. So now divisional Sunday will be mimicking championship Sunday as far as the 3 and 6:30 kickoff. Another bit of good news, and again, it's minor, but the Super Bowl is cutting down the number of commercial breaks, not total commercial time. They would never do that, of course. But I like what they're doing because they're going from 5 commercial breaks per quarter to 4 breaks per quarter. And the exchange for that is that the breaks are all going to be 30 seconds longer. So they're keeping their 2 minutes, but now it's going to be four commercial breaks with an extra 30 seconds in each one instead of five breaks. And I don't really, it's not even how long the break is that bothers me. It's the break itself. So if you can reduce the number, I'll even take three commercial breaks and make them 4 minutes long. The fewer breaks, the better. So they have done that. Maybe you'll notice it, maybe not at your Super Bowl party come the winter of 2020. But that's happening for this coming season. And then one other thing, and I had to say a little something about it. And I think anybody who's ever played football out there at any level, this is going to invoke feelings, okay? But they did vote to ban three different drills from NFL practices from now on. One of them is half line, which is not the most, actually, it's the most commonly used one of the ones they banned, but it's not the most well-known, but it's what it sounds like, half line, where you have anything from the center to the left or right, and you work with that one side of the offensive line and that one side of the defensive line. You work on, you know, running off tackle, run fits, all that stuff. That's one, all right? And then the other one is bull in the ring, which I don't think anybody in the NFL actually does. Maybe some high schools do it still. And then, of course, again, if you've played football, you know it. You may love it, you may hate it, but you know it, the Oklahoma drill, now banned from the NFL. If they're banning this in the NFL, and the reason this is a big story to me isn't because they're banning it from the NFL, because I don't think they do much of this stuff, but the reason is if they ban something in the NFL, then it's hard to justify doing it for kids. You know, if you try and go to a high school practice and, oh, we're going to do the Oklahoma drill, well, they just banned that in the NFL. We're going to do that with our kids? The NFL banned it, you know. So this might be the end of the Oklahoma drill, and I'm sure it'll be done in corners of the country. You know, not everybody's got everybody's practice filmed and things like that. You can do a lot of things that no one ever knows about. But for those of you that don't know, if you've played football, you already know all this. The Oklahoma drill, and it comes in many variations, but it's one common theme. The Oklahoma drill is when they take some pads or some tackling dummies or just some inanimate objects, and they line them up. They make an alley, which could be about 5 yards wide. It could be even narrower. And on one side, and again, this varies, you can just put two guys, one offensive lineman and one defensive lineman, and that's it. You can put a running back with the ball behind an offensive lineman against a defensive lineman. You could put three on the line with a running back and a safety behind that. I mean, there's a million variations, but it's basically just, here's a small, narrow, confined space, no wider than 5 yards usually, and sometimes narrower than that. And then I'm going to blow the whistle. Both sides go at each other, and if there's a ball carrier, he's got to try and get through there and score, or they got to bring him down. Or it could just be two people, and just basically then it's hand-to-hand combat, and whoever can push the other guy out of the ring, almost like sumo wrestling. That's kind of more like bull in the ring, but Oklahoma drills have kind of been that way too. So just like always, whether it's been hits to defenseless receivers or when there's been certain variations of targeting discussed or anything like that, there's always the crowd, oh my God, just put skirts on them already. Football isn't football anymore. I can't believe this is what passes these days. We're getting soft as a society and on and on. And again, listen, these drills, like their sole existence, I shouldn't say their sole existence, but their primary existence is two guys just ramming their helmets together. And they've seen, when they've looked at injury numbers, which they've actually done lately, they didn't used to look at injury numbers, they didn't care, but now they look at them and try to analyze. A lot of them come from early in camp. And, of course, there's many reasons for that besides just these drills, which, again, depending on the team, are fairly common or not common at all. Guys might not be in shape yet the first few weeks of camp, things like that, or first few days of camp. So it's not just these drills, but these drills, when you stop doing them, guys don't bang their heads as much, guys don't get as many concussions, guys don't get as many injuries. These are good things. And like I tell the football people all the time, the people that fancy themselves as, I'm a football guy, if you really love football, I think your greatest wish ought to be for football to hang around, right? And that's what we all want. I consider myself a football guy, and these rules lead to fewer injuries, lead to more longevity for players, lead to more safety for players. That's a good thing. Now, the Oklahoma drill, again, everybody who's ever done it, even once, has either a story or has a personal, it's almost like Gerald McCoy. It's a very polarizing thing. Some people, coach says, hey, we're doing Oklahoma's, and some guys like just they get amped up. They are so ready for that drill. They love it. They want to hit somebody. They want to be hit. They just love the contact. Others like me, I'm going to go kind of stand two or three deep. You know, the whole team kind of circles around the area, and I would always kind of find myself toward the back, hoping nobody would call on me to do the drill. I never, and this might sound crazy, and not that I was a good football player, but as a football player in general, I was never a big fan of just hitting for the sake of hitting. Wasn't my thing. I like to run, love running. Not so much for the hitting. That was me personally. But again, I was a backup wide receiver for a reason. And I can tell you one story. And this is a recent story because, again, I've talked about on this show before my exploits in semi-pro football as a guy in his mid to late 30s. And if you want to play football, and I'm not talking about flag football, I'm talking about real football, okay? If you want to play, you can still do that for all you out there that still have the dream. It's not in season right now, but there's a league called the Florida Football Alliance. It's 18 and over. It is real football with pads, NFL rules. It's not, again, two-hand touch. It's not flag football. It's not your local rec league. It's football. And there's teams all over Florida. You play a 10-game schedule. I've played the past couple seasons. I took this past season off, but the two seasons before that, I played for the Dunedin Pirates, who are going to be back in 2020. And again, I mean, there's guys out there 19, 20 years old, some in their early 20s, mid-20s. I'm 38. I'm out there, you know. But I had a blast, and I'm thinking about doing it again. We'll see how it goes when the season starts up. It's a spring league, so the games run from January through, like, April, and you start practicing, you know, a little bit after Thanksgiving. So anyway, 2 years ago, when I hadn't played semi-pro football in over 10 years and I decided to give it another crack, I go out there on my first day of practice. And I don't know any of the guys. I don't know any of the coaches. And we would practice like on the weekends, like once a week on Sundays. This is in the preseason. And so nobody even knows my name. I barely even know anybody else's name. And we're out there messing around. Semi-pro is not quite the same as far as, you know, being on an NFL team, obviously, or even a high school team as far as the structure. It's more loosely structured. But we were apparently dragging ass that day. And again, I've been out there for 30 minutes this entire time, the whole season. And our coach, a guy named Nate Barlow, wasn't the head coach, but he was a good friend of mine and still coaches with Dunedin. He like rounds everybody up, starts, "I'm tired of this bit, blah, blah. You guys are dragging us right now. Oklahoma's right now." And so we like stop right in the middle of practice and we set up the pads and everything. And again, I don't know anybody. I don't know what's going on. I'm still introducing myself to people and we're doing Oklahoma's. And I'm going out as a safety because I don't run as well as I used to, as most people don't when they're 38. I'm still pretty fast, but I think I'm better off at safety at this point than wide receiver, which is what I always play. So I'm like, okay, you know, it's my first day. And I would have never done this in high school. In high school, I would have hid in the back. But I'm thinking it's my first day. You know what I got to do? I got to get in this drill. I got to show these guys that this old guy can get out there and still thump a little bit. Let them know I'm here to play. I'm not just here for some novelty. So I watched a couple of the drills. And you know, I didn't want to go first, but I wanted to get in there, so I watched just to see what was going to go on. And after I watched a few of them, you know, I had noticed, and you know, in semi-pro, you don't have a lot of size. Like, guys aren't that big. I'm 6 feet and about 210 pounds, and I'm one of the bigger guys. By height, I'm definitely one of the bigger guys. But anybody who weighs more than, like, 215, 220 is playing on the line. So they're not going to be carrying the ball. So most of these running backs, we had a lot of these guys like 5'9", 5'10", 5'8", you know, 150, 160-pound guys, fast as hell, but guys that in an Oklahoma drill I wouldn't be too intimidated by, I can put them on the ground. So I wait and wait and wait, and finally I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to get in there and get one. Again, just want to establish my presence, let the guys know I'm here to play. I'm not just here, you know, trying to waste time. I want to get out there and thump a little bit. So I made the mistake of going in there first and letting the offense fill in. So I get in there, and the way we were doing it was one offensive lineman, or no, it was two offensive linemen versus two defensive linemen, then a defensive back, and then a running back. So the two linemen would engage each other, then the running back would try to hit the hole, and then the other person would step up for that kind of safety fill. So I get in there, who gets the ball, who steps in there? This one guy who plays fullback, his name was Denver. And Denver was about 5'10", 5'11", and about 265, 270. And could move, like he could run, he wasn't just some fat guy, he could move. So I get back there, I see him, and like I tried not to let my body language show my disappointment because I thought I was getting a little scamper back. And so, oh, and we were doing four downs, like where you go four times and try to get through like the gauntlet. So they blow the whistle to start the drill, and I'm thinking, okay, well, at least this is one of those drills where there's two linemen, like two on each side, plus me and the running back. It's kind of just going to be a mashup of bodies at the point of attack. If I just stick my head in there and just kind of, you know, just throw my shoulder in there, we can probably all just fall down on the ground. It won't be that bad. So they snap the ball. What happens? The two linemen, of course, engage each other just perfectly, and this perfect Moses Red Sea hole right down the middle opens up that I have to step up and fill the hole. You know, I was thinking maybe, you know, someone would get turned around or something, and again, it'd just be kind of a whole pile of bodies. But no, it was a perfectly clean hole with only me to fill it. So, hey, got to do it, right? I mean, I didn't come out here to play patty cake. So I step into the hole, and I just got low. I didn't hit Denver at all. I just kind of stood in there and crouched and just tried to absorb the bowling ball. Oh, and it was cold that day because it was December. And, I mean, it was like a tuning fork went off in, like, every bone in my body. Like, again, people who've played football know this. Like, you don't feel it on the outside of your skin. Like, it doesn't hurt there. It's just in your bones. Like, I was just like, ugh. And I kind of, like, caught him and fell backwards. Just a total truck. I think he fell forward a few yards. I almost hoped he was over the line so we could be done. But we had to do in three plays out of four. He scored on the third play. And then I've got these goofball, like, guys on the side saying, oh, you went too high on him. I'm like, you know what, dude? You would have had no chance tackling this guy at all, and I went too high. I'm just trying to get out there and survive. So that was the most recent one, and that was as an adult. In high school, I remember just not wanting any part of the drill whatsoever. And I wonder now if, you know, our children and their children, I guess they won't have the Oklahoma drill. But I'll tell you this much, too. And Chris Long, who just retired, who's a great follow on Twitter, he's a fun, intelligent guy, you know, talking about the Oklahoma drill, and he said, former current players, you get two hypothetical choices on how you'd want to start a full padded camp practice. A, you can stretch, have 5 minutes of individual, and individual is when you break into your position groups and do drills and stuff there. And individual sucks. I never liked individual. But he says you can stretch, have 5 minutes of individual, and then do Oklahoma's in which you only take three, four, or five reps, but minus the long individual, and you're done with practice in an hour and a half. Or he says you can do no Oklahoma's, but you've got a long-ass individual portion of practice, and the whole practice takes 2 hours. I'd rather do the Oklahoma drills, you know, and just get it over with and get a couple, like I said, get in there and thump a little bit, be done with it, and get off the field. So I understand NFL players, and you know coaches how they are. They're going to think of this as an opportunity. Oh, well, if you can't do Oklahoma's, we're going to practice and do more of this and that, and the other. It'll probably end up being worse in a lot of ways. But it's one of those things where this has less to do with the NFL to me and more the idea that if the NFL's banning it, football is probably going to be banning it, if not officially, then unofficially going forward. And so that's, you know, a sentimental thing for a lot of people. It's kind of like a baptism in a lot of ways for those if you've played football. And I have some memories of those practice fields out on the baseball field at Jesuit High School. We'd use the outfield as our practice with Coach Dom Sio and Coach Wiener and all those people. And, you know, I wonder what it'll be like without Oklahoma's for a lot of those kids who are going to be starting two-a-days coming up in August. Email me if you want to, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com, on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. Some breaking news as I'm recording here, although it's not a huge news or anything like that. Gerald McCoy has started informing teams that he's going to visit them, the ones that he's interested in. And among them, the Browns are going to be the first one that's expected to happen in the next day or two. So he'll go on some visits. I'm not sure how much any of you even care that Gerald McCoy, where he goes or doesn't go, but it's something we'll keep an eye on. I want to thank the Joes, as always, for having me on their website, giving me the chance to get on this platform in front of all of you guys. It is the single best website for Bucks coverage anywhere on the internet. And as the offseason rolls on, that is especially true because you're going to have every day, and this is the time of year when you need it the most, in my opinion. Football season, you got, you know, lots going on. But all day, wait an hour or two, new article, new article, new article. That's the way they do it at JoeBucksFan.com. So thanks to them. Thanks to the good friends of ours at Bill Curry Ford. Thanks to all of you for listening. That is the late May edition of the Free Stretch. We'll have one more in the month of May next week. And we'll know more about Ndamukong Suh's contract. at that point after he gets back from his tour of wine country, and we'll go forward from there. And it's not far, folks. Training camp, I mean, we're looking at, what is it, late May right now? We're looking at just about 2 months. We can all get through that, and I think we are getting through it and having fun. More free stretches to come. In the meantime, thanks again to all of you. Have a great weekend. Be safe. Enjoy whatever it is you're going to be doing, and especially with Memorial Day, take time. Of course, you know, there's a lot of things going on with the three-day weekend and vacations and trips and stuff. Of course, the whole point of the holiday to remember those who have fallen in service of our country. So in the meantime, take it easy. I'll be back next week. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.
And peace.